chapter 1. As you know, and already been mentioned several times today, it is the new year. A chance that a lot of people look at it and they say, all right, let's make a new year's resolution. Let's do something. It's the beginning here. It's the start of something. Let's set a promise to ourselves, a determination for ourselves that we will go and keep this throughout the year. Many times, though, these resolutions do not get made. Okay, they just don't happen. Whatever it was too lofty a goal, or we missed what we said we wouldn't have too much, or it just can't happen. I remember one time when I was in high school, I was a small guy. I still am kind of small. Not going to tell you what I weigh now because people get upset at me for being 26 years old and weighing that little. But when I was in high school, all the way up until I think 8th grade, legally I should have been in a car seat or at least a booster seat because of my weight. Not necessarily the height, but because of my weight, legally I should have been in one. Thankfully my parents did not make me do that. That would have been embarrassing. But I think it was my 9th grade year, I made a resolution that I wanted to gain 20 pounds that year. And some of you look at that, well, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to gain weight? It's like, because I weighed 90 pounds and I was in 9th grade, okay? I wanted to weigh some more. But that was a resolution that did not work. It didn't happen. I still barely weigh more than that now. And so it's just one of those things. Resolutions are something that are very hard to keep. We often do not keep those promises that we make. Sometimes we do, though, and that's exciting. Well, today I want to look at something that dealing with certain issues that come into our lives, that we make a resolution, and that we try to keep that, not just for the year, but for the rest of our lives. Now, every single one of us, no matter what you do, how old you are, where you go, you have to deal with a particular obstacle, a particular thing that you have to deal with. This situation, no matter what it is, again, that the youngest in here to the oldest in here has to deal with this. You cannot get away from it. Each one of us lives with these things. There is no aspect, avenue, or area that is not dealt with or blemished, if you will, by this dilemma. It doesn't matter what it is. But if we are taught properly, if we understand these particular things that we deal with and what we have to work with, then our lives can be much more successful, not just spiritually, but socially and academically, mentally. Everything gets better when we understand this situation and this problem. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? People. No matter what you do, you will always have to deal with people. One of my, it's not really a funny, it's funny to me, and I find the joke funny, but one of my most favorite jokes that I have is that whether I was at camp, I was here at school, wherever I was, life is so much easier without people. As cooks, we would have to make so much food for these people, get up so early, leave work very late, and we would often joke about in the kitchen, say, if there were no campers here at camp, it'd be so much easier. And with the working here at with the students and with the parents and with the other teachers, I've told Pastor Wright jokingly before, it's like, if we didn't have these students here at school, my job would be so much easier. And he looked at me, he's like, you know what, you're right, and those parents. I'll tell you what, people are a problem. And they're a situation, everything that we deal with, we have to deal with people. They're all around us, and we will never get away from them. We'll never get away from that fact that we have to deal with people. You go to the grocery store, you go to the DMV, you go to wherever it is. You go to church here, and you have to interact with people. Now, yes, some people may be shy, and you may think, well, I don't have to interact with them. I'll just close in on myself. I'll come to church, I'll do my thing, and then I'll leave. Other people have this huge fear of confrontation, of dealing with people. I know somebody that is so, well, not so much anymore, but when I first started hanging out with this person, they were so afraid to ask where something was in the grocery store or Walmart, where they would leave the store before they would ask for help finding it. They just do not like dealing with other people. Don't worry, though, my wife is getting better at it. And so, marrying me, she kind of has to deal with people. So, but with these different things, don't worry, I asked her if I could do that, so it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. But dealing with people is just something we all have to do. So what does that mean, though, for our lives? Well, now, so what? That is a question that a lot of kids ask when they're being snotty or something. We're like, well, so what? Well, that's something that we should be asking ourselves even now. Well, if we have to deal with people, now what? Now what do we do? Where do we go for that help? And I had you turn to Nehemiah, because as I was going through this, The juniors and seniors of the youth group are going through and we're studying Nehemiah once a month in our Bible study. And we're looking through it and we're looking at it. And something that jumped out to me was how Nehemiah interacted with people. And so if you're taking notes or you want to write down, the main title is Dealing with Different People. And then the little subtitle there is a character study of Nehemiah's character. And I was looking at it, and it's really the first time it hit me that this drew out is how Nehemiah dealt with different people that were in his lives, different aspects. And there's particularly one that I want to look at today that we'll study that we'll look at in just a second. But before we do, let's get the background and the story of Nehemiah. It's a familiar story, but I don't hear it preached on often. And so let's look at Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 1. It says, "The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakalel, and it came to pass in the month of Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in the Shushan, the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, and he and certain men of Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, The remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach, and the wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before God of heaven. And I said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God, that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive, and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the problem of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night, for the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. We have dealt very corruptly against thee, and have not kept thy commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments, which thou commandest thy servant Moses. Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying, If ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. But if ye turn unto me and keep my commandments and do them, though they were of you cast out unto the uttermost part of the heaven, yet will I gather them from thence and will bring them unto the place which I have chosen to set my name there. Now these are thy servants and thy people whom thou hast redeemed by the great power and by thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, let thy ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant and to the prayer of thy servants, who desire to fear thy name and prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I am the king's cupbearer." Let's pray. Dear Lord, thank you again just so much for our chance today to be able to be here, to hear the words that you have written for us so many years ago that still ring true for us today. Give me the words to speak and help the audience, the congregation here to be attentive and to hear and to learn what you would have for them. We ask this in your son's name. Amen. And so the story of Nehemiah, this man, a Jew, was a cupbearer. And again, it's one of those things that back then, we don't have something like this today necessarily, but back then, a king, a person in position, often had the chance of being assassinated, of being taken out, oftentimes by his own family. So they would employ a servant to test the food and the drink before they got it. And it was a very prestigious position because a lot of trust was put in you, but it was also kind of a very dangerous situation because if somebody didn't like the king and you tasted the poison food, well, your day ended very badly. And so that's what Nehemiah did. He was the king's cupbearer. He tasted the food. He tried it out. He made sure it wasn't poisoned beforehand. And again, it was a very trusted position that this man had, that Nehemiah had. And as a Jew, it's amazing that he had that. He would have been first generation living in this area underneath Artaxerxes, as it says in chapter 2. But it would have been an amazing chance for him, a very prestigious job that he would have been able to try the best food and drink in the kingdom because it was next going to the king. But that is his position there. We see that in chapters 1 through 2 and then verse 11 of chapter 1, it talks about that he was the cupbearer, that he was the person to do this, that he had this responsibility and this great opportunity as well. Now, that is his position. That is Nehemiah's position. But what about his personality? Let's look there at chapter 2, verse 1, and we'll see his personalities we have here. It says, "And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto him. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence." If we take a step back here and look at the text and realize what it's talking here about, we see that Nehemiah has never been sad, has never, or at least outwardly been sad, distraught, or anything like that before his king, before this person that he's there. Now, whether that was a requirement because of his job, because of his position, or he had a good, happy personality, we're not really sure there. But we see there that his personality, the way he portrayed himself in front of his king, was always positive. Now, the first application and the first thing I'd like to do here for us looking at this is how Nehemiah dealt with his unsaved boss. And that applies to a lot of us here today, that how do we interact and how do we associate ourselves, how does our unsaved boss view us? What do they see there? And the first thing that we see here is just Nehemiah's personality and his outward countenance. When he is in front of the king, when he is working with his employer, when he's working for his boss, he is not downtrodden, he's not moping around, he is not begrudging his job. He's doing everything he can to give a positive message of who he is as a person. One thing that my dad always has told me growing up is that what you are to what somebody thinks about you is who you are to them. What somebody thinks about you is who you are to them. It doesn't matter if you are the best person, if you are one of the most holy Christians in the church, if you are in a situation driving down the road, somebody cuts you off and you start screaming at your windshield, if somebody else sees you, to that person, you are an angry, violent person who is easily to get road rage. That may be something that you had a terrible day, several things culminated, bad things happened, and then that just burst out there. But to that person, you now are that guy. In other situations, when they see something, when you're walking down a hallway at your work and you're talking to somebody and you're talking to a friend, you're talking to them in confidence kind of thing, but somebody else walks by and hears just a small snippet of your conversation and then it just grows from there in their own mind, you are now that person to them. Doesn't matter what you have done in the past, what you will do in the future, what that person sees, what that person hears of you, that's who you are. And this is Nehemiah, the position he was in. He, like we said, we don't know if his personality, if he was a quiet man, if he was a happy-go-lucky kind of guy. Whatever he was, his persona that he gave to the king was, I am a joyful person. And as Christians, that is what we should be anyhow, is a joyful person. When somebody describes you, when somebody looks at you and say, tell me about this person, the idea of that person is a hard worker, they are a good person, they try to get the job done well, those are things that should describe you in the workplace. I once worked with a guy, and this was the kind of situation that I was talking about, that what somebody thought of you is who you were. I was at Bob Jones, I'd known this guy for about a year, and I was in his prayer group. Two or three of the dorm rooms were together, and they were separated into prayer groups. Each night we would get together for a prayer before lights out happened. And this guy was a lot of fun. We hung out on campus. We hung out off campus. Just did a lot of stuff together. Really enjoyable guy. And he was really great to be around. But he's the kind of person that in order for that to happen, you have to get to know him. He's shy. He's quiet and that kind of thing. He also worked with me at the snack shop. Well, he wanted to get a job off campus at the Chick-fil-A. And one of our managers also had a part-time job at that Chick-fil-A. And so when he said, hey, I work for the guy, his name was Mr. A. I work for Mr. A at the snack shop on campus. So the Chick-fil-A management went and asked, said, Mr. A, does this person, what are they? How are they? What kind of person? He's like, well, he's quiet. He works well, but he's not really a people person. And the Chick-fil-A management looked at that and said, well, we don't really want somebody who's not a people person working here. And so he didn't get the job. Now, this guy, he was a people person. He enjoyed hanging out with people. He enjoyed doing stuff. He was a lot of fun. But what my manager knew of him when he was at work, when he was dealing with things, he was quiet and it seemed not a people person, it cost him that opportunity to get a job there. And so when we are dealing with things, when we see our bosses, when our bosses see us, whether directly or indirectly, what do they think? And let's look here at some of the things here. How did Nehemiah's boss, his unsaved boss, remember, the king of this area, how did he see Nehemiah as a Christian employee servant at this point here? It says, the end of verse 1, it says, now I had not been before time sat in his presence. Verse 2, wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. And I was very sore afraid. And said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Now, if you know the Jewish calendar, which I'm not sure many of us in here do, I didn't, so I had to look it up. In verse 1 of chapter 2, it talks about the month of Nisan. In verse 1 of chapter 1, it talks about the a different month, the month of, the month of Chislu. There it is. There's a four-month difference there. And so between chapter 1 and chapter 2, there's 4 months that Nehemiah has been dealing with this situation in his mind and in his heart. He's been praying to the Lord. We have one of his prayers here. He's been pouring out his heart to God, saying, God, help the people back there. Help me somehow, Lord, let your city be rebuilt. Nehemiah didn't know how it was going to happen, but he continually prayed for the Lord for 4 months. Nehemiah kept this to himself. And that's something that's amazing there to look at as well. He says here, the city of his father's sepulchers, the place where his ancestry is left at, where these things take place, this is a sad time for him. Today in America, we don't have a huge connection to hometowns like they did back then. Now, sometimes in several places, there are family ancestries that is there, and things happen and situations take place, and we still keep track of our hometowns, but something like this does not happen to our hometowns nowadays. When I moved down to South Carolina, Winchester did not get wiped out and our walls burned with fire. It didn't happen. But the economy fell out here just like it did other places. Different places happened. So I was disappointed that it happened, but I was not distraught or heartbroken about that. Nehemiah here was completely crushed to hear that his city, Jerusalem, where the temple of God was, where the remains of the temple of God was still in shambles. It was still rubble. And so he has this for 4 months, he's thinking about that. And so for 4 months, he's kept a happy face. He's kept up his countenance. But his king now looks at him and says, you're sad. Why? You're not sick. Why are you sad? And it's something that's familiar to us, that in that situation, he could have been killed. If the king did not want to have an upset servant in front of him, he would kill that servant and get somebody that's a little more happy. And so Nehemiah is dealing here. First of all, it was interesting to me that he kept his private life private, is one of the things there. That the one thing that jumped out to me was that the first time something bad happened to him, he did not go to every single person he knew and bemoaned and complained about it. He kept his private life private. Now, there's a difference between going and complaining our lives and saying, my life is terrible, my life is miserable, I don't have anything, nothing is working right for me. And then there's a difference between that and going to friends for help, for counsel. He here obviously had several friends that he talked to about it, that gave him that report, some of his brethren, it says. And so he talked to them, but he did not go out and tell every single person that he knew about what was going on in his life. He kept that to himself, and he realized that he needed to do that. And so we have that there. But also we see his testimony before the king. What did the king actually think of him as a person, as a worker? He says, you're sad right now. You've never been like that. Something is actually wrong here. In our situations, when we're working for a boss, I worked at Berryville for about a year and also worked different places for secular, for unsaved bosses. When you are down, if you are usually a happy-go-lucky guy, and I wouldn't describe myself as happy-go-lucky, but I'm not a depressed individual. I like to talk to people. I like to get involved, things like that. So when I don't talk, people actually look at me and say, okay, what's wrong when I'm not dealing with something? It actually happened several times growing up. My friends, people I knew, I'd be my usual annoying self, and they look at me, would you just grow up? Would you just stop talking? And I was like, fine, I'll stop talking. So I stopped. I'd do my schoolwork. I'd eat my lunch. I'd whatever situation in. I wouldn't do that. About 20 minutes later, the same person would come back up to me completely unaware of what they said beforehand. And they'd say, hey, are you okay? I'm like, yeah. Well, why aren't you talking? Are you sick? Like, you just told me not to talk. Well, yeah, but I didn't think you'd listen. And so, thanks about that. But that happens there. Like, if I'm not involved, if I'm just sitting there, generally a few people will notice. That's happening here with Nehemiah. He was distracted. His mind was there. And so do we have the kind of countenance? Do we have the kind of persona, if you will, at work, that when something is bothering us, something is deeply bothering us, we have friends, we have coworkers. Here in this case, Nehemiah, his boss, looks at him and says, hey, what's wrong? Not with a callous, hey, get back to do your job, why aren't you happy right now? But hey, you're not sick. There's obviously something bothering you. What is it? And that's what Nehemiah is dealing with here. The king, it seems, is actually concerned about it. He's actually, you're not sick, what's happening here? And so he's actually concerned. Do we have people, even unsaved people, that look at us and say, hey, what's wrong? Can I help in some way? Do we have that kind of friendship with people? One of the phrases, there's three phrases that I often use very often when dealing with people, when talking to people. The first one is that knowledge is power. Like I love that phrase there. Knowledge is power. Meaning that the more you know, the more useful you are. The second phrase is not what you know, and you can probably finish this one, it's who you know. And that applies anywhere. Literally anywhere it happens. It's not what you know, it's who you know. You could have the best resume, you could have all of the experience in the world, but if you don't have the contacts to put your name into different places, that doesn't help. If there is a job opening here, but you don't know about it because nobody told you, doesn't matter what you know, it's who you know. And then the last one is that communication is key in any relationship. Knowledge is power. It's not what you know, but who you know. And communication is key in any relationship. And so today, as we're going through this, I want us to hopefully find a way that with a better knowledge of communicating with the people we know. See what I did there? Put all three of them together. A better way of communicating with the people we know. Because the reason is that if we don't build these relationships, if we don't have these ties to these people, as I mentioned at the beginning, if we don't understand these problems or these dilemmas in our lives won't work the way properly. And you can look at that in several different ways. One, socially. If we don't build relationships with people, our social lives are going to be ones that are boring, they're in shambles. When we have problems, there's nobody that's there to help us on a earthly level. And then you think about academically. Many of us are not in school anymore, but we're still learning things. We're still learning from different ideas and different things there. If we don't know people that can teach us new things, then that our minds will deteriorate there. There's a quote that I read once that said that if you are always the smartest person in the room, you need to find new people to hang out with. And that's something that it seems hard there at the beginning. But you think if you're the smartest one in the room, find more people that you can learn from. Learn that way. Do it that way. And then also, we have those there, but especially spiritually. As we see here, Nehemiah doesn't necessarily witness to his boss here, as we'll see in a couple of verses. But he does have the testimony there of a Christian, of something that is happening there. Spiritually, we deteriorate for two reasons. One, God says, do not forsake the assembling of ourselves together. And that is talking about with fellow Christians. If we do not build the relationships with others in the church, with family members that are saved, if we do not develop that, our lives deteriorate and fall apart. As I mentioned, communication is key in any relationship at all, no matter what it is. And that especially goes for Christians, telling each other that what the Lord did in your life, how he encouraged you, how you can encourage others. But then also the idea spiritually is that if we don't build relationships with people, we cannot witness to them effectively. It used to be back during the Great Awakenings, even right after Christ came, that hundreds of people were being saved, that thousands of people were coming to the Lord. The Great Awakenings, they were able to stand on a street corner, people would listen, and then dozens would get saved at a time there. That still happens today. The Lord still works. His power is still there. But a part of that was because people had a basic understanding of Christ. They had a basic understanding of the Bible, and they believed that there was a God. Our society is not like that anymore. We have to build relationships before we can start talking to people. Always see these Yahoo articles that pop up. They say like the top 10 things to put on your resume or the top 5 things to deal with dogs or whatever, something like that. And I saw one. It was like the top 12 things never to say on your first day of a job. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. I'm not really planning on getting a new job anytime soon. But, you know, knowledge is power. So I'll just read it in just case. Some of them were like, hey, what's the gossip? Like, who is here? Or what's the Christmas party like? And what kind of raise am I planning on getting? But one of the things on there that I found interesting, and it actually surprised me, was that one of the top 12 things not to say on your first day was, hey, would you come to my church this Sunday? And it kind of took me aback there. I was like, well, in today's society, it's one of those things that people don't want, and in their words, they don't want religion, they don't want the Bible shoved down their throats. And that's what a lot of the times, even if we do that, if we say, hey, you want to come to church on Sunday, they feel like we're badgering them. And it's one of those things that we don't have a relationship with them, and so they don't understand that it's not what we're doing. So relationships, both spiritually, or both ways spiritually, with the saved and the unsaved, have to be developed there. And we see that Nehemiah did that. And so for 4 months, he had this situation. His city was burned. Now let's look here at what took place. Verse 4, it says, "And the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request?" So verse 2, he says, "Nehemiah, you're sad. Why? You're not sick. Tell me what's going on here." Verse 3, he says, "My city is burned. The streets are destroyed. The walls are torn down. There are no gates. How can I help but not be sad?" And then we see in verse 4, the king looks back and says, "What do you want? What do you need?" That is just amazing there. The king here is looking at a servant. He's not looking at an advisor. He's not looking at a friend. He's not looking at an equal. He's looking at a servant. And one of the other words here, the beginning there, we talked about servant, is almost a slave, is really the kind of idea here. Indentured servant or slave. The king is looking at this man and saying, "What do you want?" And Nehemiah there, I'm sure he was taken back kind of thing, where he was hoping, he was praying about it, but I don't know if he ever thought about what happened there. But he sees here what takes place. Because of Nehemiah's testimony, because of his reputation, when he had a problem, the king looked back at him and said, "How can I help? What can I do for you?" And so what does that, again, the application for us? With our lives, what is it like with our bosses? Whether it's a saved boss or unsaved boss, how are we in that situation? How do we deal with that? Back then in the palace, there would have been ears everywhere. So if you were bad-mouthing the king, if you were talking about something negative in that way, he would have found out about it and you most likely would have been executed. Court gossip would have been a big thing. And today, again, no matter where we are in a situation, gossip is something that develops. And when we're bad-mouthing a boss, when we're pulling down the administration that is above us, other people see that, other people hear that, they get that reputation from us, and it may even get back to our superiors there. So what are you? Are you somebody who participates in the gossip, that you spread it there, that you go there? You really do have the philosophy that's ingrained in you, the more I know, the better I am, that kind of thing. Not necessarily knowledge is power, but if I know all the stuff about these people, then I can be kind of in control. Everybody comes to me for the gossip. Are you the person that helps with the gossip? Are you the person that sits there and when you see it happen, you don't participate, but you don't try to stop it either? That's the same kind of thing there. Is somebody who, as if they see a fire burning, they may not have started the fire, but they also don't do anything to put it out. That person is just as useless, if not more so, than the person spreading it. Or are you the one that when you see the gossip there, you confront it? "We shouldn't be talking about this. Guys, you know that's not true. You know that's not right there." I believe it was Aristotle who, one of his people came to him and said, "Hey, did you hear about so-and-so?" And Aristotle looked back and said, "Well, first off, do you know it's true?" "Well, no, I don't know that this is true." And I said, "Okay, do you know if this will help me?" "Well, I don't know if it'll help you or not." And Aristotle looks and says, "I don't want it." One of the quotes there that is attributed to him is that he's saying, "I don't want something known about somebody else, whether it's true or if it's going to help me." So even then, even if something is true, do we need to spread it? One of the dangers that I've seen in several churches is prayer requests. Now, obviously, we're told to bring our requests to others, but how often do we give a prayer request like, "Yes, Pastor, I heard that Mrs. Becky Lou is having a terrible time with her neighbors, and what she says about them is just terrible. I wish to pray for her soul." And Miss Becky Lou is sitting like right next to you. And so oftentimes the prayer requests turn into gossip chains. They turn into situations where we get to spread about whatever we want there. So what is our reputation at the workplaces there with the different people? So we see that. We see that the king is willing to give anything to Nehemiah, saying, "What do you need?" He's not saying, "All right, now I've got a couple of things here in the corner I can give you. That's really the best I can do." But would you have the opportunity, if your boss, if your superior, whether owner of the company, management, whatever it is, if he looked at you, if you came to him with a problem, what would be his response? And that is mainly based upon what is your reputation, what kind of a worker are you? We've all seen or experienced different types of workers, the slackers, the overachievers, all these different people. Be the one that God wants us to be there, that works hard, that gets the job done, and goes the next step. Whenever I would go on a trip in the youth group, one thing that Pastor Shank would tell us that he told us a couple of times, he said, wherever you go into a situation, if you stay in a home, if you stay in a church, leave it better than it was before. Meaning, if you go into a home and you are in the bathroom, you're brushing your teeth, you know there's speckles all over the mirror. Well, you didn't put the speckles there, but just take a white cloth, a washcloth, and wipe them off there. Leave it better than it was before. Not because you're looking for any praise, because it's the right thing to do. And so what kind of reputation? We see that Nehemiah is given a blank check saying, what do you want? Verse 5 there. Well, actually, let's finish verse 4 here. It says, then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I pray to the God of heaven. And verse 5 says, and I said unto the king, if it please the king, if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I sent him a time. And I set him a time. This is the second phenomenal thing that we see here that is a result of Nehemiah's good reputation, good work ethic, and good testimony at the place there. We see that Nehemiah says, hey, can I leave? Can I go somewhere else so that I can go build my city, so that I can see what's going on there? And then the king says, how long will you be gone? There's a step missing in there. Nehemiah says, can I leave? And the king says, Artaxerxes, how long will you be gone? The king never says yes or sure or no problem. He just automatically assumes that there. He's like, well, if you're going to leave, how long are you going to be for? He didn't give permission to leave. He said, you're going to be gone. You're leaving. That's beyond a shadow of a doubt. I'm letting you go. How long will it be? And what we see there again is there's two main things. The first of all, we see that Nehemiah's trust that he had built in the king. He simply says, how long will you be gone? Meaning, the king understands that Nehemiah will return. When his job responsibility is done there, he will not abandon this responsibility that he had the first time. With our responsibilities in our life and our workplace, can you be trusted with situations? Growing up, I enjoyed responsibilities, I enjoyed different things, but I didn't have a lot of them. As kids, teenagers, you don't get a lot of responsibilities. But as you get older, you get more and more things piled on top of you, and if you don't write them down, if you don't organize them, you forget about them. And so that's what I do. I have a calendar now. I try to write things down, and so I don't forget about certain events. But responsibilities that we have, and each one of us has different responsibilities depending on our age, our position, whatever it is, we have different jobs that we have to do. Can somebody trust you with your responsibilities? You look at the scripture verse that he that is faithful in the little things will also be faithful in the big things. That is there is one of those amazing promises that God has given us. It doesn't often look as a promise, though. But if you look at that and you understand it, if you're going to be able to handle just doing your job, putting in 8 hours a day of work without having to worry about other things, where people can trust you for different things, the situation will be amazing there. There's a guy I knew that had got a new job, and he had worked there for 3 months. Only 3 months. And as soon as he started working there for 3 months, they come to him and says, hey, we need you to go out of state to another plant, fix a problem there. All right, I'll go fix a problem. When he got to that, I think it was in Akron, Ohio. When he got to Akron, Ohio, he was there at that plant fixing the problem. As soon as he showed up there, his boss calls him again and says, hey, Troy, Michigan got some water damage. We need you to drive to Troy to fix the problem there. And so this guy, he was gone. He had to go from where he was originally, fly up, drive from Akron to Troy. When he gets there, he evaluates it, drives back to Akron to get the parts to fix it, drives back to Troy to get the problem fixed, and then a few days later drives back to Akron to fix their problems, and then flies back to the original plant, is what he had to do there. He'd only worked there for 3 months. The reputation that he could be trusted was there, that they knew he knew what he was doing, he understood what he was doing, and his bosses knew that. Not because I know this person well, he doesn't brag about his abilities, he doesn't show off with what he's doing, but he knows his stuff, and he does it well. And with those different things there, that's what Nehemiah was. He knew his stuff, and he did it well. He would go, he would do his job, and he would do it so well that when he was done, the king wanted him to come back and do it again. When you get a job done, does your boss want you to do that job again? I've seen people before and they've told me, they say, I really don't want to do this job. I hate this part of my job. I do it poorly enough, they'll give it to somebody else. I've been told that strategy before. And it's one of those things that I'm looking at, and as Christians, that should never be something that we do. Regardless of what our responsibilities are, regardless of how hard they seem, the difficulties there, they were given to us for a reason. We can ask for help, we can go to different places to get advice, things like that, but we should never give up on our responsibilities or do a poor job because we are wanting them to be easier. We should never slack off so our lives can be easier. God says that if we are faithful and just in the little things, He will give us the big things that we can handle there. And that is not just something that He sees, but it's something that the Christians, or that the other people see as well. And then we see here, we've looked at Nehemiah's position, his personality. We've seen what the king saw of him from there, his unsaved boss. And then let's look here at verse 8, or verse 7. We'll see what does Nehemiah ask and the results of getting that. It says, verse 7, it says, "Moreover, I said unto the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come into Judah. And a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which appertain to the house, and for which the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Then I came to the governors beyond the rivers, and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. When Sobalt the Hororite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel." And so here we see the king gives him a blank check. But Nehemiah goes here, and as soon as the king says, "What do you need? How long are you going to be gone for?" You almost can hear the paper crinkling as Nehemiah pulls out a sheet and says, "Well, this is what I need." Nehemiah prepared for the future. He was ready for this to happen. Like I said, we don't know if he was planning for it to happen, but he was ready for it. He was hoping it would. And so he knew what he needed. He knew he needed timber. He knew he needed permission to cross the rivers, protection as he was going there. When we are doing our jobs, when we are working with our bosses, with fellow employees, things like that, are we prepared to do it? Tomorrow, the academy goes back to school after Christmas break, and several other schools in the area will be going back. If not tomorrow, they will be doing it soon. Many students, I've already asked them, "Hey, you ready for school to start?" And unanimously, I have gotten the same answer: no. Now, that is, granted, a mental kind of ready. They don't want to go back to school. They don't want to do the schoolwork kind of thing. But if you ask a teacher, says, "Hey, are you ready for school to go back?" You'll probably get the same answer: no. Saw this comic and it showed this door closed and the dad was slamming on the, beating on the door and he's saying, "Hey, you've got to go to school." And then it showed a little thought bubble coming out. It's like, "But I don't want to go to school. You can't make me do it." And then it slams like, "But honey, you're the teacher." And so it's the kind of thing there where we do want to be there, but the teachers, again, mentally maybe aren't ready, but academically and things like that, we've got to be prepared for it. When we're given a job, when we're given responsibilities, we have to be prepared for it. And not just then, but Nehemiah here, he was hoping for this job. He was hoping for this, if you will, and he will see it later, this promotion. Nehemiah gets promoted later on to governor of Judah, to this area around Jerusalem. He was hoping to get that. And so in our lives, in our employees, in our as employees, employer relationship, if we're looking for a promotion, if we're looking for something better, if we're working towards that goal, which we all should, we should be working to do better, and for the Lord's sake, for the Lord's glory, if we are looking for that, we need to be prepared for it. You don't look for a promotion, say, "All right, I want that job, I want that promotion, I want that responsibility," and as soon as you get there, you have no idea what you're doing or how to handle it. And that goes, again, for any age group. If we're wanting something, if we're looking forward to it, if we're trying to get it, we need to be prepared for it. And so what do we see here? What applications do we draw out of this for the Christians, for the modern-day believer? First of all, our relationship with our unsaved or even saved boss. How do they see us? If we were to ask them something, if they were to look at us and see that we were down, if we were sad, if we were upset about something, would they notice? Do we have a cheerful attitude in such a way that they would notice there's a difference? And then if they noticed, would they care? Do they have, because you can often see and be like, "Oh, that person over there, they're feeling sad, but I don't have any kind of relationship to go talk to them about it, so I'm just going to stay back. Would that be what our employees or our fellow coworkers and our bosses would do? Would they just stay back? Would they care if we were upset about something? And then if we did come to them for a request, if something took place, would we have the trust, would we have built the character in their minds to have been given a blank check like Nehemiah was? To have been given the trust to say, okay, you can go do that, and obviously you're going to come back. I'm expecting that. The king didn't look at Nehemiah and say, okay, you can go work on there, but I'm only doing it for 3 months because I don't really trust you to come back. You have to come back after 3 months. No, the king looked at him and said, when will you be back? I know you will, but when will you be? So would they notice if we were sad, if we were upset because our countenance had changed? Would they care? And then would they have the trust built and developed in our lives for something like that? How would they see us? How do we interact with our bosses, whether saved or unsaved here? And so Nehemiah dealing with different people, the first major one we see here is him dealing with his unsaved boss. How do you interact with your boss as a Christian on a day-to-day basis? Let's pray. Dear God, we see here the message and the story of Nehemiah, the opportunity that we have here to learn from him, the example that he has given us, the knowledge that we can have here that you found important for us. The message that you've given here today, I ask that you would help us to remember this and be something that sticks in our minds, that we would understand and practice in our own lives, something that we would be there for us to be able to use. If you keep your heads bowed and your eyes closed, I'm going to have Valerie play Just As I Am.